And the story is called To Die For. You see, Bob was one of those friends that you really need in life. We would torment each other, we would tease each other, and drag each other off to bizarre adventures. I took him to a bookstore that was upstairs from a laundromat. Inside the laundromat, not separately. He took me to a place where a man sold tea in an industrial district in downtown Los Angeles that was on the other side of downtown from Chinatown, but the man had escaped the fall of China in 1949 and brought tea and formulas with him, and he looked like he was that old. Well, this time, Bob had said, "It's going to be a surprise, but I think you'll like it." And we stopped at a place in Hollywood, and we walked up the street, and up the street there was a newsstand that both of us had gone to, but instead he turned into the alley. That was odd. I didn't know of any reason to go down that alley. It looked familiar, like it had been in old movies, and I learned later that it had been in several old silent movies, of all things. But partway down that alley, there was a guy standing outside a door that was recessed in the wall. A big guy. And he was dressed in a jet black version of a chef's uniform. And he looked like he had muscles on top of his muscles. And Bob walked up to him and the guy said, "Yeah, what are you here for?" And Bob said, "Ingredients." Well, the guy smiled and pulled open the big iron door, and we walked in to what looked like it must have been a speakeasy during Prohibition. But now there were tables, big restaurant tables, and on those tables were things you use to cook. Now, Bob went over to the places with the herbs and spices because he was always making spaghetti sauces and chili con carne. But my nose led me to the other side of the room, because there was the most profound and dedicated aroma of chocolate I had ever experienced. There was a man there with an odd look to him, and he had chocolate powders and chocolate bars and chocolate in various forms there, and a little pan of something behind the counter. And he said, "Well, are you new to this sort of thing?" And I pointed to one of the chocolates there and said, is that Brazilian? Or am I mistaken?" And he said, "Why, you have a good nose for this. Let me try you on something else." And he pulled out the pan from behind the counter and took off the lid, and inside was what appeared to be fudge. And he cut off a little piece and said, "Taste this, and you can see what happens when you take these ingredients and make them into something special." Well, I tasted it, and it was amazing. It tasted like it had been made from 70 to 75% dark chocolate that had just a hint of some kind of a fruit flavor to it. Not a fruit that I was familiar with, but one that was very nice in this. And there was a tiny bit of a peppery spice in there that gave it a bit of a kick. And I said, "That's amazing. Are you selling that fudge too?" And he said, "No, only the recipe, but there's a price." And I said, "Well, what kind of a price? I'd be interested. I want to see what I could do with something like that to impress friends, and I'd like to make something like it." He said, "Well, the price could be your immortal soul, but let's make it a bet instead. See if you can come up with something as good as this fudge, and I'll give you the recipe." And I said, "I don't know if I can. One of the problems is that I've got some family recipes, but I don't have some of the ingredients to make the recipe products. And this was true because, you see, the family recipes came down from my great-grandmother. And she was the sort of person who would write down great recipes, including the details of where the ingredients had come from. And since my great-grandfather was a sailor, and he took pride in picking up cooking ingredients for her when he would drop into foreign ports, some of this stuff was pretty obscure. And he said, I'll tell you what. You bring the recipe, I'll find the ingredients. Well, what if you can't find the ingredients? If I can't find the ingredients, then we'll call it a win and you get the recipe. Well, okay, I had to at least try this, and it was probably going to be cheaper than selling in my immortal soul for the fudge recipe, but I went over to find Bob, and he was still finding ingredients for his concoctions. Anything that would go into a tomato-based sauce or with meat, those were the things he was finding. And I said, we're going to have to come back here next week. And he was surprised at hearing that because we usually only went to places once in a while. No, this is important. So I went home and started looking through the things that my grandmother had left me. My mother wasn't much of a cook, so I inherited the notes that my great-grandmother had made. And since my grandmother had cooked for me every weekday till I was 5 years old, she knew that I could appreciate food and had at least some idea what I was doing. Because even at the age of 5, I could help her in the kitchen. But this meant something special. And I looked and looked and found it. It was the brownie recipe. Now, my great-grandmother had made these brownies with ingredients my great-granddad had brought back from overseas. And the problem was, my grandmother said, well, once this vanilla is used up, there won't be any more. And I said, why? Well, something bad happened to where they grew it. So I can't get any more of it. And your great-granddad isn't around to explore to find more. This was going to be the recipe. Because I remembered how this recipe tasted. And if the guy there at that little indoor farmer's market was able to find the ingredients, this was going to be the brownie batch of all time. And so next week, Bob and I went back to Hollywood and we walked down that alley and the big guy at the door remembered us. And we went in and I went back to the chocolate table and said, okay, here's my recipe for the contests. This is the one where if you can find me the ingredients, I'm going to make a batch of brownies that's at least as good as that batch of fudge. And he laughed and looked. And it was old writing on the recipe because I brought the one that I'd been given, not my copy that I'd typed. And he said, 2 weeks. Some of these things have to come from a long distance. Well, I knew that. My granddad had traveled all over the Pacific on tramps, freighters, and you know, this was going to be a little tricky. But 2 weeks later, I got Bob to bring me back. And I went to the chocolate table. And the man had one of those expressions on his face that said, I don't know where you got this recipe or this list of ingredients. Technically, it's not cheating, but I can't get this vanilla that's in here. I said, well, neither could anybody but my great-granddad. That was the problem. And he says, do you know why? Well, only sort of. My grandmother said something bad had happened where that was. And he said, yes. This vanilla was a variety grown southwest of Jakarta along the coastline. And do you know why they don't grow it there anymore? Well, no. It's because of that stupid volcano and the waves that were created when Krakatoa blew up. It washed away the soil, the farms, the orchids from which the vanilla was derived, and that variety is extinct. And I said, I knew it was hard to find, didn't know it was completely gone. Bah, he said. All right. A wager is a wager, and you win. Here is the recipe for the fudge. Use it well. And I promised I wouldn't use that fudge for evil, no matter what. And I took the recipe and took back the one that I'd given him, went home. And don't you know that even with changes in the ingredients that I made over time, that fudge was just to die for. But I'm glad I didn't have to spend my soul to get the recipe.